Good morning. We didn't announce that there is a children's Bible hour going on right now, and you may notice some kids fleeing as we speak. But if you have some small kids that you'd like to send that way, it's out the doors and to the left, and someone will lead you where you need to be. We're glad to have you here this morning. I know we have a lot of visitors, with it being Easter, and we have some visitors anyway. And whatever brings you here today, we're glad you're here. If you've been with us before, we're glad to have you back. If this is your first experience with the Churches of Christ, we're really glad to have you here today. And we do have a little sheet there on the table in the back that explains a little more about who we are, if you'd like to learn more. But honestly, the best way to find out about who we are is to talk to us, as frightening as that might be sometimes. And so we hope that you will take a little time after we're done here today and get to know us a little better. You will find, once you have been around for a bit, this is a hard place to get out of sometimes. We like to talk, we like to chat, and when we have an excuse, we like to eat, which is good. But we love to be a part of each other's lives, and we hope that this is something that you also would like to be a part of in your life. This morning, we will be talking about the resurrection. Some of you probably came expecting that. Some of you are not quite sure what to expect when you get here, but we like to take the chance, since our society talks about it today, to join in that conversation. And we'll be skipping around through several different Gospels today. If you're not familiar with the Bible, there are four Gospel accounts of the life of Jesus, and they all look at things from a different angle, some from personal experience, some from stories that have been relayed, all through the work of the Holy Spirit, inspiring those words for them to write down. And in each of them, we see a different picture of who Jesus is. And we find in the Gospels that when there is something that is relayed in all four, that that's something that's a little extra important. There are several stories that might just relate in one Gospel or in two, but the resurrection is one that we find pieces of in all four. And so we'll skip around a little bit this morning to what the different writers have to say about this event. We'll begin in Matthew chapter 28. And you'll find this resurrection story, if you want to look through the whole thing later, you'll find it in Matthew 28, in Luke 24, in John 20, and in Mark 16. In Matthew 28, beginning in verse 1, Matthew writes, "After the Sabbath, at dawn, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord had come down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were as white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook, and they became like dead men." We have to start this story in a couple different ways. First of all, if you were with us last week, we talked about the trials of Jesus. And Jesus went before Annas and Caiaphas and before Pilate and was accused falsely of an awful lot of things. And they had false witnesses come out to give testimony. And even then, there wasn't really enough to convict him. But Pilate took the easy route of what the Jews wanted at the time and sent him to his death. He went through a lot of torture along the way. Carried his cross to the place where he would die, was nailed to that cross where he hung for hours, slowly dying. And if you had been one who had followed him to this point, I can't imagine what would be going through your mind as you watch all this happen. Now, most of his followers ran away and hid. Maybe some in fear for their lives, maybe some just because they couldn't believe what was happening. And maybe for some, this shook them to their core. Because the one who they had believed, the one who they had followed, is now dying in front of them. Changed everything. And he tried to tell them that this was coming, but they just didn't quite understand as he would try to tell them this story. And as he hung there and he died, and there seemed to be a finality to everything that was going on, and then they carried on with life the next day. All these events of Friday, where everything seemed its very darkest. And the day that passes in between, and everything seems like it has come to an end, and then Sunday comes around. And you may ask yourself as you read this story, why would you have guards at the tomb? Now, I do not like funerals, which puts me in the wrong line of work. I don't like funerals, and I will share a really, really bad confession with you. I also don't like potlucks. And so I have two strikes against me for what I do for a living, but I don't like funerals. And I associate funerals with a lot of sadness, and a lot of loss, just from ones I went to early on in life. And after going to some that were very close to me, I found it hard for a while to go to funerals again after that. When I was a youth intern, learning about youth ministry in Valdosta, Georgia, in the summer of 1994, about 3 days into it, we had the first death at that congregation, and they found out I knew how to sing. And so I became part of the funeral singing crew. And in Valdosta, Georgia, they had this tradition of, it was rare to have a funeral service in a church building or even at a funeral home. Everything happened at the graveside. And so the crowd would come out there to the graveside, and generally instead of singing, because we were still in the songbook days way back then, they would have a group of people who would sing, and I was the tenor that would go around this group. And it was 99 degrees almost every day of the summer in Valdosta, Georgia, with about 90% humidity on a good day. It was hot. It was a thick air kind of hot. Every time you guys talk about humidity, I laugh to myself because I think you have no idea. And I would go out there in my coat and tie, because that's what you did, and I would sweat and sweat and sweat some more. And we buried more people during that summer than I could tell you. We would go out to graveyards where there would be a hole in front of us and a coffin next to it or over it, and we would sing and we would read from Scripture and we would pray. And as I went through all this process, what I never saw there was a guard to make sure that everything went exactly the way it was, and that when someone would come in later with dirt to cover the coffin that was now in the ground, to make sure it stayed there. Now, the reasoning for this that we see is, even though his disciples didn't get it, people knew that what he was teaching was that he would rise again. And they thought, the people in charge, they thought to themselves, if his disciples come in and they steal the body, then they can start a story about how he actually did rise again. So we're going to make sure that doesn't happen. We're going to place these guards at the tomb, and then we're going to seal the tomb. And we have to see right away here that this tomb is very different than what you and I see. I don't know if you've been around very many above-ground cemeteries. I grew up about 2 hours from New Orleans, Louisiana, which is 8 feet, I believe, below sea level. And they bury above ground. They have all these tombs that are above ground. In the Mideast at this time, they had tombs that would be in caves. And so you would have a cave, and usually it would be about a 3 or 4 foot door, because there's no point in just carving a giant door out of this cave. And you would duck down and you would walk into this cave, and there would be little spaces where a family might be buried within that tomb. And then they would roll in front of it this giant stone when they were finished. And if you could imagine what a stone of this size would weigh and the people it would take to roll it back and forth, this is where Jesus would be. And they rolled this stone to seal. They put a seal across it with wax at either side and placed these guards out front to make sure nothing out of the ordinary would happen. And if you know anything about God at this point, is God likes out of the ordinary to happen. And so there is this earthquake, and there is this angel, and the guards are afraid, which is probably, once again, another incredible understatement of Scripture. And the stone rolls away, and depending on the account you look at it, you can either envision the stone rolling away. I'm guessing there's some sort of a track in the ground where the stone would have been rolled in the first place, and it's just rolled out of place so that the tomb would be open. One of the accounts, I believe it's Luke's, says the stone is rolled away from the tomb. So maybe even further away from the door and just completely out of the picture, the stone is rolled away, and the guards don't know what to do at this moment, and I will imagine they run. They would run for their lives because this is not what they expected to happen. They probably thought when they were assigned to guard duty at the tomb to make sure nothing comes out, that one, this is the craziest assignment they've ever had, and two, it's the easiest assignment they've ever had. And everything changes in a moment. Moving along in Mark's gospel, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Now, here's another place where we see what was done 2,000 years ago is a little different than what is done today. Their process of preserving the body is not what we do nowadays. Their process of preserving the body was to wrap that body in linen. And they would wrap it in spices, about 75 pounds worth, because of the odors that would come. And they would wrap these linens tightly around it. I imagine the closest thing we could think of is when you think of mummies, as that linen is wrapped around. And they would place another linen on his face and wrap more around. And they were coming in to take care of the body that morning. They show up early to anoint the body, very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise. Now, I don't know how you feel about cemeteries. I don't go to them very often. But I'll tell you, when I really don't go to them, it's when it's dark. I don't like cemeteries in the dark. It is an eerie place to be. And they set out before sunrise in this already a little bit eerie place. And if you know anything about the culture of the time, they have a lot of thoughts about the spiritual world. They have a lot of thoughts about what might be going on. You remember we talked a few weeks ago about Jesus walking on the water, and one of the first things they thought was it was a ghost coming towards them on the water. Here they are in the darkness of the morning at this cemetery, just after sunrise. They're on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? They haven't had this thought yet as they're going along. I would imagine, very much like a lot of us might be thinking, if the person that we cared so much about, who was leading us, was taken away. You might not be thinking at your clearest. They weren't planning this whole thing out completely, and then they had this thought of, who's going to roll the stone away? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side, and once again, understatement, and they were alarmed. This is not what they expected to happen that morning. And I think sometimes we will look at this story, and it is such a story to us that we have heard so many times that these are just the things that are supposed to happen in the story. Sometime today, ABC, I believe it is, will play the Ten Commandments movie. I remember watching this on Easter every year growing up on Sunday evening and watching Charlton Heston split the sea back in the 50s with Cecil B. DeMille and all the effects. And being amazed by all of this, and I didn't see a lot of unexpected things coming along in that story. Put yourself where these people are. I have a friend in Arkansas who recently lost her son to an illness. She had a post on Facebook last week where they have set the stone on his grave in the last week, and she had pictures of it. I imagine she's made a lot of trips to that grave. Her son was a teenager. Could you imagine going to the grave of someone you had lost just a few days later, and as you approach that grave, you notice that instead of covered with dirt, that hole is open. And you begin to wonder what's going on. And you look somewhere kind of near that hole in the ground, and you see the lid to a coffin lying on its side over on the other side there. This is a real story that happened. It's not just something from a book. This is not some fairy tale. This is something that actually happened. People came because their loved one, the one they cared about, had died, and they found a grave that was empty with this man sitting in white. And I ask you this, if you came back from that, how would you explain that to someone else? And what would they think about your story? This is the craziest thing they have ever heard. They would wonder if you're still asleep. They would wonder if you were drunk, if you were on something, if you had lost your mind, if you're hallucinating. They go into the tomb and find not only Jesus is not there, but here is this guy in white. The angel says to the women in Matthew 28 and verse 5, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified." And again, if you think back to angels when we were talking about the birth of Christ, one of the first things they almost always say, do not be afraid, because they know when you encounter them, you're afraid. This is unusual. This is not what you're expecting that day. Do not be afraid. I know why you're here, and it's not going to be what you think it is. Do not be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay, then go and quickly tell his disciples. He is risen from the dead. He is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you. It's just as he said. He has been trying to tell you this for years. He has tried to tell you, if you read your bulletin this morning, in different ways, in different places, using different analogies, and he just can't quite get it through. And I don't know about you, that makes me feel a whole lot better in what I do. Because I get up here every week, and I try to tell you things in different ways, using different stories and different analogies, hoping I will get it across. I got up here last week, and I talked for a while, and I told a couple stories, and you laughed once or twice, hopefully at the right times. Stepped down, we offered an invitation, we went on with the day. I stood at the back waiting like I do every week, and the thought going through my mind was, well, that was a dud. Had something really, it's the trials of Jesus. There's something good to be done there, and man, I blew that big time. Got an email from Cindy Hoffman a day or two later that said, that might be the best sermon you preached since you've been here. Still not quite sure what to make of that. I thought it was a dud, and anyway. And I thought to myself, even Jesus tries to relay this information over and over again, and they just don't quite get it. And for us, I think God tries to get into our lives. I think he tries to get to us again and again in different ways, through different people, in different stories, in different times, in different experiences. And sometimes we don't quite get there. And this angel says to them, it's what he said is going to happen. You shouldn't be surprised here. This grave was supposed to be empty. Now, maybe you're surprised that this time of day, maybe you thought it'd be later today. Maybe you're surprised that I'm here and it's not just an empty grave. But they're surprised because that's how unreal this story seems. That's why when we try to take this story out into our world, people struggle. Because the thought of showing up at a cemetery and finding that coffin lid off to the side and a hole still there in the ground, it's shocking. But it's just as he said. So she came running in John chapter 20 and verse 2 to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said, they have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him. Now, I don't want to leave this point behind. It's kind of a side point, but do with this what you will. If you're visiting especially, and you hear a lot about Christianity and the church and how we view different people in different places, isn't it interesting to this point that the characters in the story have been guards who ran away, an angel sent by God, and women? You will hear again and again in our culture that the Bible is anti-women. If the Bible is anti-women, it sure puts them in important places and important stories, doesn't it? Here are these women who are the first human witnesses to what has happened, other than the guards who have ran and probably still don't really know what's happened. These women come back with the story, and they come back with the story to tell, he's gone. We don't know where he is, and they've still not completely wrapped their head around this. Could it be that someone's just come and taken him? Could it be that he's, what's going on here? So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running. The other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. Now there's some debate about who this other disciple is, the disciple who Jesus loved. I think a lot of us have grown up hearing that this is John, and that's probably the best explanation and the most popular, and would also explain why he takes the time to tell you that he won the race, because he's writing this gospel. But he beats him to the tomb. He gets there, he bends over and looks in, and again, remember how these tombs work. There are 3 or 4 foot doors, and so you're going to have to bend down to look inside. He bends over and looks in, sees the strips of linen that lying there, but did not go in. And think back again for a minute to the guards. We have placed guards at the tomb because we want to make sure the body is not stolen and nobody gets away with this. If you were coming to steal a body, and I will guarantee you that there are people who will come away with the story of, well, somebody must have stolen the body. If you were coming to steal the body, why would you leave the linen cloth there? There are guards outside, Roman armed guards outside. There's a sealed tomb. There's this giant rock. If you have managed to get by the guards to move the rock away, is your objective not going to be to get that body out of there and gone as quickly as humanly possible? This body is wrapped and wrapped and wrapped and wrapped. And what they find is this hollow wrapping still laying there. Amazing, amazing story. He looks in, he sees it, but he does not go in. they both ran. Now, we know that John ran, or the disciple, won the race because he wrote it down. If you had heard the news that that one you loved, you cared about so much, who you knew was buried a couple days ago, if you heard the news that that tomb was empty, how fast would you run to get there? There is a moment out of despair that they have had over the last couple days of now just an inkling of hope. And isn't that all it takes for us? And if you get nothing else from this morning, and I hope this story maybe comes alive to you, I hope that even though you've heard it before, for those who have, that it still means something. But if you leave here with nothing else this morning, I want you to think about that little seed of hope that God has planted in our lives. And that sometimes that is all we need to run towards Him. They are running to this tomb. John doesn't go in. Simon Peter comes along behind him, went straight into the tomb. And this is Peter, is it not? If we know anything about Peter, and you read about Peter in the Gospels, he runs headlong into everything. And if there's anybody who wants to find an empty tomb that morning, it's Peter. Because what we have not spent time to this point on, as Jesus is being tried, Peter is denying him because he's afraid. And if there is anybody in this group of people that wants another chance to see Jesus face to face, it's Peter. Because he knows what it is to have made the bad choice. He knows what it is to have fallen short. He knows what it is to have boldly said, I will do this right thing, and to then go do the opposite. Peter needs this hope badly, and he runs. And he runs to the tomb, and he runs into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. It's as if the body just vanished from inside it. Finally, in verse 8, chapter 20, the other disciple who had reached the tomb first also went inside. He saw and believed. He saw and believed. Now, I am a skeptical guy. And I honestly don't know what I would have thought if I had walked in there and seen this empty tomb. But John, he saw and he believed. They still did not understand, verse 9, from Scripture, that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. They still didn't understand. And this is, I would imagine, where some of us find ourselves this morning. We believe Jesus is who he says and did what he said he did. But I don't know that we still completely understand how that works. Now, we want to. We want to wrap our heads around it. We want to get as much as we can. But we still don't completely understand. And God knows that about us. Because these guys were here and saw it, and they still don't completely understand. Paul writes about it in Philippians chapter 3. He says, I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of his resurrection and participation in his suffering, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. He talks about participation. I want to participate in this whole thing, and that's what we want as a church today. We participate every Sunday. If you're visiting and you've not been here before, you might think this is something we pulled out because it's Easter. We do this every week. Every week we remember his body and his blood that was shed for us, and remember the fact that he rose again. We are here because that tomb was found empty. And we participate in it daily. Not just even on Sundays, but daily in the way that we live. He'd also write about it in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, where he says, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you have received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel, you were saved. If you hold firmly to the word I preached to you, otherwise you have believed in vain. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas and then to the 12. This is of first importance, the fact that Jesus comes, he dies, and he is raised again. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers and sisters at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to the apostles, and last he appeared to me also as one abnormally born. But if it is preached that Christ has been raised from the dead, how can some of you say there is no resurrection of the dead? If there is no resurrection of the dead, then not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith. If this story is not true, then what we have done for the last hour and 10 minutes is a waste of time. There's no point in us having been here. There's no point in the symbolism of what we've done. There's no point in the songs that Ron led us in about the resurrection. None of this would matter. But Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 20, but Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. For since death came through a man, the resurrection of the dead comes also through a man. Christ has been raised from the dead. What an incredible story. The kind of story that it's difficult to think of even making up pieces of it, nevertheless the whole. God sends his son here because he desires reconciliation with us so much that he will give him as a sacrifice for us, and that he will overcome death, and because he overcomes death, then we too overcome death. Now, you may have not entered that cemetery and found the coffin lid over on the side and the hole, and then approach that hole and see empty as you walk up. But I am here to tell you that because of what Jesus has done for us, that grave might as well be empty. Because we live on. We live on with him through eternity. And that is why we are here, not just this Sunday, but every Sunday, to celebrate the fact that he is risen. He is not in that tomb. And if you go to the Middle East today, there are four or five different people that say they have found the tomb. And they're all convinced that theirs is the one because they can make money giving you the tour if theirs is the one. In every last one of them, you will go in and what you will find is empty. And I don't know if one of them has got the right one or not, or if the right one is yet to be found. But wherever that one is, you will find it empty. Because that is the part of the story that people have been trying for 2,000 years to deny, and here we are. Here we are 2,000 years later celebrating the fact that he rose and overcame death. And this morning, if you like Paul, what we read in Philippians, if you'd like to participate in that resurrection, he would like for you to. He would like for you to be a part of the body, to be a part of those who understand that what he did is unlike what anyone else has ever done in the course of history in overcoming death. And we are dead to this life and buried with him in baptism, and we rise to walk in a new life. And if you would like to take part in that this morning, or if you would like to renew your commitment to him, to be a part of the church, if there are things that we can pray about for you, if there are things we can do to help draw you closer to him, whatever need you may have, please come as we stand and sing.